Hello everyone, welcome back to this brand new series of JF Interviews. My primary objective from this series really is to have dialogue with genuine sales and marketing thought leaders, which leads me nicely into today's guest, Tim Reistra. Tim is the co-author of The Three Value Conversations and Conversations That Win the Complex Sale. He's the Chief Strategy and Research Officer for Corporate Visions, who we have a very, very good relationship with. And they are, of course, a leading consulting and training company. Well, that's my intro done. Welcome, Tim.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Good to be here.
Now, I think we should call this the topic of this interview or conversation, as I prefer, Beyond the Classroom, Matching Skills Training to the Selling Moment. So let me begin by asking you this. As I mentioned in the introduction, you are the co-author of The Three Value Conversations, a book we named actually as Top Sales and Marketing Book last year. And I personally enjoyed it immensely. For the benefit of the listeners, would you explain The Three Value Conversations?
The Three Value Conversations really stem from this idea that there are three skills that salespeople must master. And these skills are also measurable. I like to give the example of how in show business, you have your top performers. And when you praise them, it's because they're called the triple threat. And that means they can act, sing, and dance. They can do all three. So they're called the triple threat. In sales, we look at it as a bit like a performance. And we think there's also a triple threat skill set that your salespeople have to master so that they can be a top performer. And we look at them as pipeline development, proposals that pass muster with executives, and profitability of deals. And each one of those three, pipeline, proposals, and profits, is driven by one of the three conversations we wrote about. So real quickly, the first value conversation we call creating value. This is where salespeople have to be able to tell a story that helps overcome their prospects' bias towards status quo, and then differentiates them from the competition in a way that creates more and legitimate pipeline. The second is elevating value. They must now move this opportunity into a real deal. And this requires them to build business proposals and business cases that connect to the external issues and the company's strategic initiatives and pull that all into your solution and then create a story or business case that passes muster with the senior levels, the executive level decision makers. So that's elevating value. And then third, we talk about capturing value. This is this idea that you have to avoid profit leaks that take place throughout the buying process and in the negotiation process and be able to do this with a discipline that protects your pricing and your margins. So creating value for pipeline, elevating value for proposals that pass muster with executives, and capturing value to protect your margins. These are the three skills that can form the basis of a competency model tied to actual metrics and outcomes.
I can identify with that completely, Tim. And I think my question to you would be, you refer to top performers. I mean, these are they not really advanced skills? To to bring these three together, you're looking at, you know, a very high level of competency. Possibly, I mean, I always refer to top 5% players, but I'm led to believe now, and I find this news quite encouraging, we're now talking about top 7%.
Well, we're going to take our encouragement where we can get it.
Yeah, I think we have to. But you know, in your experience, in your considerable experience, and you're seeing what's going on out there, you're at the front line on almost a daily basis. I mean, what percentage let's be realistic, what percentage of frontline sales professionals are able to bring these three skills together?
You know, so I'd probably be taking a wild guess. I haven't done the data on it. I think the one thing, if you think foundationally, though, these three skills, building a pipeline, generating opportunities, and then being able to communicate that well through proposals and business cases and negotiating well, those should be foundational skills if you really think about it. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, that traffics a deal through the entire buying cycle, and those are key moments. So you'd want greater or lesser degrees. Everybody could do some of that. I would say that on average, when we look at anybody as a high adopting, high performer in any one of these areas, we'll see about 25 to 30% of sales forces really grab hold of it. But what I'm talking about is, because often we'll train these as three individual skills, is one skill at a time. So maybe the math works out okay. When you take 25 to 30% and divide it by three, yeah, you find out who the naturals are.
Yeah.
And then comes the ideas behind how to reinforce, develop, support, because again, I would say all three of these must be accomplished for a deal to make it through the entire buyer's journey. So somewhere a company's got to rally to make that happen.
Absolutely, yeah. But again, you know, I believe they're advanced skills, and I believe that when we look at sales skills training today, these skills are not being taught generally, and we're going to come on to this in a moment, I know. So I think what we're looking at here is a very high level of commercial competence, not simply sales competence, because the ability to have that kind of conversation in the C-lounge and at executive level, it isn't something that is trainable, frankly, is it?
Well, I would agree with that. I think what happens is when you see salespeople get trained, they get trained on a sales process that allows them to fill in certain kinds of sheets to document their activity and hopefully document progress in a buyer's journey. So they're managing opportunities. But yes, these three skills are sort of what we believe are the breakthrough skills. When you look at everybody's products and services, you're like, you know, more or less, everybody's selling some of the same stuff in every category. So what the breakthrough opportunity we think is the salesperson's conversation. That's where differentiation happens. That's where the story gets told. And if all things are considered the same, we think the best story told the best is actually going to be the moment of differentiation.
Yeah. No, I accept that. I accept that entirely. Okay, look, we've touched on sales skills training. I mean, in your opinion, Tim, what is the biggest skills training challenge that B2B companies are facing today?
I don't think this will be a surprise, but it certainly was interesting. We recently did some research and did it with 274 companies around the world, and we discovered that 56% of people said the main reason they don't train enough people is because it takes too much time out of the field. And 37% said they don't have the budget to train as many people as they'd like. So that's 56% versus 37%. So the real challenge is getting people out of the field. I don't think that's a surprise, but that is the high limiting factor. I think the other challenge is one that most people don't even realize, and that's that the learning paths that they create for salespeople are somewhat arbitrary. We found in the same survey that they rely on managers often to make the decision what training your salespeople should have, and it's based on sort of a manager's feeling about what salespeople need, not necessarily any particular performance indicator or not necessarily any type of needs assessment, just a manager's gut feel. But this is also the same manager who doesn't want them to take time out of the field. So both challenges are interestingly intertwined.
Yes, and we're making an assumption that just because a sales manager was appointed more often than not because they were, when the position arose, they were the top performing salesperson on the team, that automatically they can move into management. And again, you know, they can then become a sales trainer and they can train on the skills, which is an absolute fallacy, isn't it?
Well, right. And then expect them to manage pipelines and support sales calls. Every time we pile something else on the manager, and because it would make sense in the deployment of any kind of behavior change or change management that the frontline manager would be the gatekeeper and should lead that, but there's only so many hours in the day, and we've really put a lot of burden on people that, you know, are questionably trained for that job.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is a particular hot topic for me right now. I mean, the reality is also, I think, that we're witnessing that sales achievement levels are actually plummeting year on year. I think 4 years ago, the average was about 54% of frontline salespeople hitting annual quotas. It's predicted to dip below 50% this year. And one can only hope that these sales managers and these organizations will wake up and realize and smell that caffeine orientated aroma and realize that if they don't train their people, then they're going to continue to get the results that they've been getting. And that's the simple answer, isn't it?
Yeah, they're caught in a decision here where they think that keeping people in the field will give them a better chance of hitting their number. Mm. And they that that pressure to do that means that people can get scheduled for training and it will get canceled at the last minute when their performance is flagging and you find yourself in this vicious cycle.
Yeah. So in other words, let's throw some more mud at the wall and hopefully some of it will stick.
Yeah, more time. Just get on the phone, call more people, more activity. That should help, yeah.
I mean, do you have an answer, Tim? I mean, you know, do you have an answer to the question, so what can companies do to limit time out of the field without sacrificing essential and necessary training?
Well, my answer isn't necessarily a breakthrough. I think it's the application of the answer I'm about to give you. The answer is being told to us by the market. Our research also told us that the investment in classroom type activity that requires people out of the field is flat at best. But the area that's increasing in investment, companies are making an increase in investment. In fact, 65% of companies plan to increase their spend on virtual types of training. Mm. Now, the irony is that they rate virtual training as not very effective. Only 10% of people say it's the most effective training out there. The rest say you need to be in a classroom or engaging in some sort of applicational workshop-y type of experience. And I don't disagree with that. But their spend is telling you something different. So I think that puts us in sort of an interesting dilemma where we know that we need to do more virtual training, but it can't just be about efficiency. It can't just be about getting to more people at lower cost. You have to think of ways to make it more effective.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, is there a case, Tim, for blended learning, sort of mix it up so that you've got, you know, the classroom training and you've got virtual? I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges for sales managers is they probably look back on their sales career and, you know, they think about the times they turned up to the sort of, you know, the classroom model and the trainer came into the room armed with, you know, a whole rainforest full of folders and everybody sat there and worked diligently through it and couldn't wait. You know, it's almost like that feeling you've had when you've just been in for root canal work. You know, when you come out, it's a relief that it's over. Maybe that's in the back of their mind, do you think?
Yeah, I think what you made a good point about the blended learning idea. People learn best when they actually do, when they try, when they bump into something and then figure out a way over it. And so the idea of blended learning is kind of gone one step further into something called a flipped classroom, where you flip it and that you actually make the e-learning more robust, and the e-learning transfers the knowledge, the concepts. And then the classroom time is all about application and hands-on workshop. So instead of doing a little bit of e-learning at the beginning and multiple days in a classroom, you do more e-learning up front and your classroom time is focused on application. So thereby you shrink the amount of classroom time required to teach the concepts and you just get into working sessions. It does require that you deploy and track more intensive knowledge transfer or concepts taught online. But that's what we're seeing is people reserving less time but more effective use of that time in application, stand, deliver, practice, coach, feedback, instead of doing the teaching right there in the room.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, do you see a day when classroom training will be consigned to the annals of history?
Maybe in its present form, yes. I had one very large company tell me recently that standalone skills training is going out of fashion at our company. Mm. And it was a very intriguing, and you don't know if this is a cycle, but it is very interesting to hear that said from one of the giants in global industry, and they have thousands, probably 8, 10, 12,000 salespeople in all, if you count inside and outside, saying this, and that begs the question. So then, well, what will replace it? And how will you ensure there's some effectiveness still delivered? But my answer is, I don't know the timing, but when you have big companies who sort of set the tone, I'm seeing that future eventually.
One other question that sort of relates to this topic. In your experience, how many organizations are actually conducting a formal skills audit at the front end and being specific in the training that their sales team requires? Because my experience is at the moment, so many companies are still training their company on skills or their team with you know, and on skills that actually are redundant in this new sales world. And others are just going into it blindly, led by a sales training company, who obviously have got their own, you know, they've got their own mandate. And I do find that far too few companies are conducting a formal audit. What's your experience there?
You make a good point. A lot of companies still live in a world where they have training based on the tenure of the rep, regardless of what their skills needs might be. You're here this long, you get this training, or you're new, you get this training, or the role of the salesperson. You're in this role, you get this training. And it's, that's pretty arbitrary if you actually think about a formal needs assessment. So I believe there's really two things that companies can look at. One is now with sales automation and CRM systems really taking shape and companies getting better data in there, you can actually see based on actual performance data where salespeople are struggling. In particular, like around the three value conversations, are there people struggling to create enough pipeline? You can look at their close ratios and then look at their current pipeline, and you know who's got a problem, who might need some training in that area. In the proposal area and creating a business case, you can see in your pipeline that here's a group of salespeople who seem to get their deals to stage three, and then everything gets stuck. I like to say their pipeline gets constipated. And so they probably are having a problem elevating that conversation and getting executive buy-in. You can also measure with sales automation people who are unscrupulously discounting and losing their margins. You can track all this now. So why guess based on tenure and role? Why not look at performance data and then maybe in addition correlate that to some sort of needs assessment? We've actually, for the three value conversations, created a formal needs assessment to identify where across these three value conversations people are struggling. It's a behavioral outcomes type survey tool. And we can help show stack rank which of these conversations they struggle the most in. And you could really create a learning plan based on needs assessment and then think how powerful it would be then to correlate that with actual performance data from your CRM.
Absolutely. Okay, well, sadly, Tim, as you know, we are time constrained with these short, sharp interviews, but it's been a pleasure, as it always is. I'm very grateful that you managed to sort of squeeze me in. I think New York today, London was last week when we last spoke. So you've obviously got a pretty horrendous schedule, or exciting, as you probably see it. So thank you very much indeed. Now, I'm pretty certain the listeners are going to want to get over to Corporate Vision. Do you want to give your contact details?
Sure. The website is a pretty solid self-service website. So corporatevisions, all one word, .com. Corporatevisions.com is the best way to get a hold of us there. All of our research, a lot of fast-paced videos on our research that will allow you to consume the work we do with Stanford University around skills and competencies and the kinds of conversations salespeople should have. So look forward to seeing people checking that out.
Okay, Tim, thanks. And really a footnote, listeners, you really do need to get yourself a copy of the Three Value Conversations and Conversations That Win the Complex Sale. It really is an excellent book. And I wasn't at all surprised that it won the 2015 Top Sales Book of the Year. So I think, you know, assume that that is a reference for that book. Again, Tim, many thanks. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. I hope you're enjoying this new series. We will be posting a new interview and recording one, of course, each week. This is Jonathan Farrington. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.